This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. As many newspapers struggle, cut staff, and stories, web-based publications hope to fill the void. Some are national in scope, but many more are local, in some cases very, very local, focused on a town or a neighborhood, even on a block. A few employed paid professional journalists who do original reporting on politics, education, crime. More use volunteers to aggregate stories from existing newspapers and other online sources. So far, these so-called hyper-local sites have as much difficulty attracting advertisers as their print-based brethren. Some are nonprofits funded by foundations. More are commercially oriented and rely on investors in it for the long run. What's not yet clear is how these news sites complement other local media, and where newspapers close, if they can fill their function. Later, we'll talk with the lady who gets all your Rafe Fiennes love letters. She answers celeb fan mail. But first, hyperlocal news sites. Do you go to a local website to get your news? How does it compare to the local paper? Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. There's also a conversation at our website. That's at npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. Investigative journalism demands a lot of time and money. Many worry that it could disappear with newspapers. Last week, though, a website called voiceofsandiego.org won a major investigative journalism award. Editor Andrew Donahue joins us now from San Diego, and congratulations.
Thank you very much, and thanks for having me.
And two of your reporters worked for months digging through public records to expose a corrupt public official. I think you'd agree on the expensive and labor-intensive description. Was it worth it?
Well, it was definitely worth it, though I do want to challenge the expensive notion a little bit. I think one thing that we've proven is that if you do something on the Internet, it's amazingly more efficient. And if you come in with a clear mission that you're going to do investigative reporting and sort of leave some of the smaller things, maybe some of the smaller meeting stories or some of the smaller press release stories to the side, that it really isn't that expensive of an endeavor at all.
Though you had to keep those reporters on staff for months while they're presumably not producing a whole lot of stories for your website.
We do, but they're producing other stories. In this particular instance, and there's kind of two different ways you can do these investigations, this was what is called the rolling investigation. So you're doing stories every time you're finding out more information. So this produced months and months and months worth of content for us, sometimes 5-6 stories a week.
So on the investigative front, more of the Watergate model, here's this development, here's this development, here's this development, as opposed to, working quietly for months and months and months, and finally here's a big blockbuster.
Sure. And we do that, too. We just had one that hit a big two-part series on a massive mortgage fraud scheme that was going on here in San Diego and other places in California. So we do that as well. But I think it is important to note that, you know, when you're doing something, Internet journalism, it just doesn't cost all that much money. We don't have to spend very much money on the printing press or the paper or the distribution or anything like that. We're not doing international reporting, so we're not flying reporters to Moscow to dig up a document or something like that. So on a very local level, investigative reporting does not have to be very expensive.
Yet you say you're able to do that, at least in part, because somebody else is covering the meetings and doing what you call press release journalism.
Sure, exactly. And I think that's what's important to realize is for a long time, the last 20 years and 30 years in a lot of cities in America, you've just had one monopoly paper, and that's been the only place where you could get any of that information. And I think that's the important thing that we're starting to see now. Yes, we're seeing a massive financial crisis and correction in newspapers, but we're also starting to see more and more competition among more and more different publications. And I think that's ultimately a good thing.
And what's your business plan? How do you pay for that?
Sure. Our business plan isn't a whole lot different than yours, actually. We do, fundraising.
It'll never work.
Well, you guys have been around for quite a while, so we have a lot of faith. But, you know, everything that you guys do, minus the government funding, and then we do get online advertising. So that sort of supplants almost the same amount of percentage that you guys get from government money.
So it's donations from supporters, and also you get donations from foundations.
Yes, we do. And I think the key there is people started to see, probably a lot like public radio or public television, people started to see a gap between what they wanted from their newspapers and what they were actually getting in community news. And so if the marketplace wasn't filling that niche, they decided, how do you do that? Then you fund it through philanthropy. And, you know, we think that there's a long record of Americans funding their journalism through philanthropy. It's now that we're confronted with this crisis with newspapers that I think people are starting to understand a little bit more how important that sort of news, investigative reporting, in-depth reporting is to their community. And the people here in San Diego have been very willing to fund that.
Do you accept stories from people in the community, or is all of your content produced by professional journalists?
All of our news content is done by professional journalists. We have op-ed, contributions just like a newspaper does in its op-ed pages. And then we also have what's called Cafe San Diego. It's sort of a community blog for the day for activists, community members, business people, politicians, anybody who has something to say. We give them a blog for the day and they go with it.
And do you publish things like reviews of local restaurants, the movie reviews, that sort of thing?
No, we don't. We're not trying to be what the daily newspaper used to be, which was this sort of general accumulation of everything. We don't believe that we're going to be your only source of information in the day. So what we are after is the best stories, the best quality of life, local impactful stories that we can find.
And are those strictly hard news, or do you do features as well?
We do features, but we do it from the sort of angle of why is this important to you as in perhaps a neighbor or a colleague of this person, if we're doing a profile or something like that. So, they tend to be issue-based, but we do a fair share of feature reporting as well.
We're talking with Andrew Donahue, editor of the voiceofsandiego.org, a small website, getting bigger website in San Diego, California, won an award last week from the group Investigative Reporters and Editors. Believe me, it's a prestigious award. Where do you go to get your news? Do you go to local websites? If so, how do they complement other local media? Give us a call, 800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org. Steve's on the line with us from Des Moines.
Hello.
Hi, Steve.
I just wanted to say that I'm a senior citizen, and as a result, I probably like the hard copy better. However, I also read some of my news online because of the immediacy of it and the convenience of being wherever I want to be. But I also am a webmaster and trying to collect news in a particular sport in just our state. I understand the aspect of it, trying to put everything together on one page so that people in a hobby situation or something can go to that site and get information.
The Des Moines Register, of course, one of the best-known newspapers in the country.
Yeah, and I think people around here kind of, like everywhere else, they wonder what's happening with it. It's turning a little more into a local paper, I think. And that's maybe because of being owned by Gannett. But still, they don't cover every activity. In my case, sports, my particular sport, which is running and triathlon, mm-hmm. they don't cover it the way we'd like to see it. And so that's where those little hobby-type websites come into play, and that's what I do.
Thanks very much, Steve. Appreciate it.
Yep.
Bye-bye. And I assume you have competition like that in San Diego, too, Andrew Donahue.
We do. I have an uncle named Steve in Des Moines, so I was afraid he was calling to prank me, but luckily that wasn't him. I think what you're seeing, like Steve was talking about, was there's a whole class of really information junkies on much more specific topics, like he said, running or track, or maybe it's just politics, or maybe it's just education. And I think that's what web news sites on the web are really starting to appeal to people, because they're going a little bit more in depth. It doesn't have to be, information doesn't have to be crafted for this mass audience, the same people that are going to pick up, the housing section or the local section or something like that. So the web is a really powerful tool for really digging deep and really satisfying, that sort of itch for the junkie.
Here's an email question from Sarah in West Harrison, Indiana. How can a free online news service run by volunteers grow from doing unbiased coverage of local government to doing investigative reporting? Is there a risk of losing the trust of our readers in the factual coverage if we venture into controversial issues?
That's a great question. No, as long as you set up all the rules. I mean, one of the most important things I think that we've done from the start has been very clear with what our rules are. We raise money, but we don't We don't allow any of our fundraising to interfere with our news content the same way newspapers have always worked hard to try to not let the advertising interfere with the news content as well. So I think if you set those rules up and you're very honest and open with people and you're open and honest with your readers, you're going to have to take on those controversial issues because those are the things that people want to read about.
Let's go now to Warren. Warren with us from Okemos in Michigan.
Yes, hello.
Hi.
I just wanted to comment that this emergence of the very local media is opening up an opportunity for a layer beneath that, and that would be trusted suppliers of data for aggregators.
And what kind of data are you talking about?
Well, we've chosen to specialize in event listings, which tends to be something that's very commercial, and we've developed an alternative, which is a free database. We take event listing data, and then we wrap it in metadata and make it available for aggregators.
And the event data meaning, is that a movie schedule?
Primarily very local things. For instance, a fish fry at the VFW hall or a local women's club.
So community bulletin board kind of material.
Exactly, except it's actual event listings, and then it's subject to metadata that makes it more easily aggregated. So we, for instance, iCal is a common format or XCal.
I see. And are those things that make sense to you, Andrew?
Yeah, they do. You know, the newspapers not only have had a monopoly in a lot of cities on the actual news content and opinion content, but also just on information in general, because they were the people with the distribution means. And now you're seeing that people, you don't need to go to your daily newspaper to get the weather anymore. There's a weather website that's going to give you even more in-depth information. You don't necessarily need to go to your local newspaper to get a movie review, because maybe there's another movie reviewer in New York that you trust a little bit more, or maybe there's a very specific movies website. In the same way with event listings and all that sort of stuff, that a lot more people can get involved in a lot more different and specific information on the Internet.
Warren, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Good luck to you. And Andrew Donahue, again, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Andrew Donahue, editor of voiceofsandiego.org, with us from a studio there in San Diego. Coming up, what's the business plan for all this investigative cyber ink? We'll talk with John Broad, the co-founder and CEO of the hyperlocal news site Patch. And we want to hear from you. Do you go to a local website to get your news? How does it compare to the local paper? 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website, npr.org. Click on Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan. Stay with us. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. As many newspapers struggle, the era of the ink-stained wretch might be giving way to the laptop-carrying wretch. Some web news sites are hoping to fill the investigative void left by failing newspapers. Do you go to a local website to get your news? If so, how does it compare with your local newspaper? 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our website at npr.org. Just click on Talk of the Nation. Joining us now is John Broad, co-founder and CEO of Patch. That's a hyper-local website that publishes in three northeast New Jersey towns, South Orange, Maplewood, and Millburn. He joins us from our bureau in New York. Nice to have you with us today.
Thank you very much for having me, Neil.
And what's the genesis of Patch?
Well, Patch.com, as you mentioned, is really the simplest way to think about it is that it's an online real-time newspaper dedicated to individual communities. We combine professional, original journalism with community contribution to deliver community-specific news, sports, schools, government information, as well as announcements, events, business listings, volunteer opportunities, and more.
And this is as newspapers in that part of the country, I assume they're going through the same kind of struggles as newspapers everywhere else.
Exactly. As major metropolitan daily newspapers unfortunately struggle, they are cutting back coverage largely at the community level. And we believe at Patch that this has created a void in sort of the quantity, quality, and access to information at what we would consider the all-important community-specific level.
And, of course, the reason the newspapers are having trouble is because they're having trouble getting advertising. It's not necessarily, they say, so much a readership issue as an advertising issue. How are you funding? You have many fewer costs, like the Voice of San Diego, but how are you funding your operation?
Exactly. I would start by saying our costs, when you compare Patch.com's cost to a like-size daily newspaper and you take out the cost of ink, distribution, print, significant overhead, you're left with about 4.5% of the cost of a like-sized daily newspaper. And the way on the revenue side, the way that we generate revenue, it's 100% free to users, and we have a two-pronged approach to revenue. The first is a do-it-yourself advertising solution, which allows these community-specific businesses and organizations with three clicks of the mouse, a swipe of a credit card, and in less than 30 seconds to create high-quality internet ads on Patch. And then we supplement that with an advertising sales representative who reps a cluster of Patch sites who both evangelizes the do-it-yourself solution as well as takes more traditional orders for more classic internet advertising on Patch.
And are you covering that 4.5% of what it would cost to publish a considerably a comparably sized newspaper?
Well, we're 11 weeks old. We couldn't be happier with our initial success by every sort of measure. In our first month of operation, full month of operation, which was March, we're already at month 15 in terms of our projections for page views and uniques. And so while it's early days, we're very encouraged by the initial uptake. And we are confident that over time we'll be able to exceed the 4.5% of costs and create a very profitable business.
And help pay back some of the venture capitalists who've invested in this idea in the hopes that it will produce a lot of money someday.
That's exactly right. I mean, I would say you asked me sort of the genesis of Patch.com. It's important to note, I think, that Tim Armstrong, who was the former president of advertising and commerce at Google and is the current CEO and chairman of AOL, really came up with the idea for Patch back in October of 2007. He and his family, Tim and his family, were looking for ways to volunteer in their hometown of Riverside, Connecticut. Tim turned to the internet, not surprisingly, went through newspaper sites, government sites, volunteer sites, and more, and got incredibly frustrated at the lack of information at the community-specific level. He then called me. I was, at the time, running his private investment company and said, I think there's something here. And over the next several weekends, we dug deeper and realized that the problem wasn't only relegated to volunteer information at the community-specific level, but in fact was kind of a larger issue of news and information in general. And as we dug even further, we realized that this wasn't only an issue in Riverside, Connecticut, which happens to be one of the most resourced towns in the country, but is in fact sort of pervasive in every town, every community, USA.
And we wish Patch and every other journalistic enterprise all the best in the world, but we do have to note that there have been many other, similarly optimistic sites launched like this that have fallen by the wayside, and I'm sure you're aware of that too.
Yes. I think there are really a handful of things that differentiate us from current competitors and historic attempts at this that have not done as well. The first is that we are really focused on professional journalists. We hire one professional journalist for every community that we go into, and these communities are sort of 20 to 50,000 populations. We think that's really important. It ensures quality of information. It ensures that we have comprehensive information, and it ensures that we understand the rhythms and nuances and uniqueness of each community and that we can solicit user-generated content from within. The second thing, again, is the low cost. We are 4.5% of a like-sized newspaper in terms of costs. And the third is where we are in time. And what I mean by that is, you know, the local advertising business is a $96.2 billion total business. About $13 billion of that is currently online, and that's projected to double over the next 4 years. So we think that given all of those factors, we're really well positioned to, over time, create a profitable business and be successful where others have failed.
Let's get some more listeners in on the conversation. 800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org. Bob's on the line from St. Louis.
Hello.
Hi.
This is Bob Duffy. I'm associate editor of the St. Louis Beacon, and our operation was actually helped very much in the early days by Andrew and Voice of San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
So I just I wanted to weigh in with a voice from the Midwest to tell you about the Beacon and how we are serving a local population with a newspaper where many of us worked, who are on the Beacon staff, the Post-Dispatch, which is struggling, and we are actually about to celebrate our first official birthday next week on the 28th of August, and we have a robust following, and we have a staff of about 17 editors, reporters, and business folks. We are a not-for-profit organization, and did that deliberately so that we would be able to distinguish ourselves from
the newspaper,
profit-driven operations.
And Bob, if that newspaper were to go away tomorrow, would the Beacon fill that hole?
Well, I hesitate to answer that question because I certainly wish the Post-Dispatch nothing ill. We've positioned ourselves to do something a bit different. I mean, while we are covering the local scene thoroughly, it's a question of going deep on stories and really concentrating.
So you are a complement to the newspaper as opposed to a...
I would say indeed we are, yes.
Okay. And there would be a loss to the community if the newspaper went away.
It would certainly would be. Yes.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, Bob, congratulations. Happy birthday.
Thank you very much, and give my best to Andrew.
He may be listening, so we'll have to see. Let's see if we can go now to Leslie. Leslie with us from Farmington Hill in Michigan.
Yes. I guess why I love my local newspaper, by the way, which is the Detroit Free Press News, and the thing that I miss is that when I would go into diners or restaurants that I frequent, and there's a copy of the paper, it's like, oh, did you see the story about? And everyone can pass that story around. Did you see the editorial or the op-ed or whatever? And it created that instant community because you can pass something around to that person who hadn't seen it. And you have this water cooler type of effect that creates an instant community with people who you probably wouldn't normally community with. And while I'm not saying internet news is bad, I mean, I do use it, but I use it more as a supplement than an in place of. I guess that's what I'm saying is that internet news doesn't have that kind of did you see, you know.
And John Broad, I'm sure, would be the first to say we've all emailed a lot of stories to each other, but not necessarily to people we don't know or run into in the diner. And I think Leslie's point, John, is that it's different.
It is, and I was going to make that point about email. I think also commenting is important, right? So on every, you know, at Patch and in most hyperlocal sites, you can comment on every article and really express your opinions and I think create almost a virtual community that way. But again, I don't think this is necessarily about replacement. I think this is very complementary. You know, we're all about strengthening communities. Our entire mission is about strengthening communities and improving the lives of residents through information. So anybody who's contributing, you know, to the ecosystem of accurate and good information at the community-specific level, we think is terrific, whether that's a newspaper, a blog, a radio station website, et cetera.
And Leslie, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it. I wanted to ask, do you do investigative journalism? Do you see that as part of your mission? And I hesitate to point out here, too, a lot of local papers around the country did not do a lot in the way of investigative journalism, and the watchdog function was, the dog licked more than it barked.
Right. It's something that we debate and discuss a lot in the office. I would say we don't do a ton of it now. We're really focused on sort of, you know, breaking news, news about government issues and incidents, school boards, sports, businesses, et cetera. But I think as we learn, again, we're only 11 weeks old, we're going to understand what our consumers and our communities are really interested in, and then we can better serve them, whether it be investigative journalism or some other form.
Email question from Martha in Little Rock. What about the future of documentation when technology changes or busts? Without hard copies of newspapers, how will future historians research and evaluate information?
Is that a question to me?
I guess so, yeah. You're the guest here.
Right. I think it's an interesting one. I think that that technology, while it may crash occasionally and far less so than it used to, I've been in the business for over 10 years, it's pretty much there, and I think will be actually end up being a better archiving system than paper in the future.
Here's another email comment. This is from Jesse in Cambridge, Massachusetts. I'm a native of Minnesota, political junkie who's been living in Minnesota for many years. Excuse me, in Massachusetts for many years. I still try to keep track of what goes on in Minnesota. And, of course, the biggest news story there has been the U.S. Senate recount. The legacy national media has done a poor job of covering that story. The best way I've been able to keep up with the happenings in the recount has been through some very strong local Internet-only sites like MinPost, theuptake.org, and MinnesotaIndependent.com. They all make great use of social networking, online chats, and Twitter. Without them, I'm afraid Ken Rudin would be my only source for coverage of the story. Oh, heaven forfend. And that's John Broad. You understand you exist in the context of a huge universe of other online sources.
Absolutely. But we are hyper-focused on hyper-local, I think. And by the way, we love MinPost, and I think that's terrific how that emailer is using that site. We think that there are a lot of, you know, outlets who are doing a nice job of covering regional news, national news, and international news. But at the community-specific level, again, we believe that there's a void there that we're trying to fill, not only with our professional journalists and their original journalism, but also by linking to other credible sources who are contributing to that hyperlocal ecosystem.
John Broad is co-founder and CEO of Patch, a hyperlocal news site which publishes in three New Jersey towns and soon to be, well, I guess everywhere. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's go to Mary. Mary with us from Wakulla County in Florida.
Hi.
Hi, Mary.
How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
I was just calling in to say that I actually am the owner and publisher of a hyperlocal news site here in our county, and we're about 27,000 people. We started the site in 2005 because we had a weekly newspaper, but we didn't have any daily source of news at all in the county. And so we started this website, and it has grown incredibly in the last 4 years, and I think it filled a need for people to be informed on a daily basis of mainly events and things that are happening in the county.
And how many people of those 27,000 in the county read your website?
Well, we have about 15,000 unique visitors a month, and we have about, I think we had 650,000 page views last month. We have a newsletter, an e-newsletter that is open for subscription. It's a free subscription. And we have about 4,000 subscribers to that e-newsletter right now.
And are you making money?
A little bit. not a lot, because I'm a one-person shop, and I do not have time to really go out and sell advertising. But any ads I do sell are through networking or just people contacting me through the website. You know, people contact me. I really do not go out and seek it. But we make enough to have a little bit of a supplemental income.
And do you, in addition to publishing things like, you know, newsletters and events and that sort of thing, do you hold public officials accountable?
We did when they first started the website. I got very involved in our local politics and went to county commission meetings and reported on the meetings every week, and we really had a lot of government information on the website. And then as time went on, I became so busy and also found that it was hard to, in a small community, it is really hard to become controversial because you know everybody.
And they know you.
And they know you, and they hold, they I think they really felt like it was a personal thing on my part at times, and that was very hard for me to deal with.
I can understand that, yeah. Mm-hmm. Mary, we wish you the best of luck.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. And we'll go to this email from Roger in the Dalles in Oregon. As a newspaper editor, I can applaud enterprising reporters for local online entities who actually attend the boring meetings for the kernels of news and report the things their neighbors need to know. But I'm tired of the Internet ripping off and reposting our material. I agree with Dave Zeke of the American Society of Newspaper Editors, who wrote in 2007, when someone tells me they get their news from the Internet, I want to say, oh, yeah, so tell me again, how many reporters does Yahoo have at City Hall? How many correspondents from Google are risking their lives in Iraq? John Broad, does he have a point?
You know, at Patch, we really take a media agnostic approach to our hyperlocal news and information. And what I mean by that is we want to deliver this content to our users however they want to experience it, whether it's on our website, whether it's via an email, whether it's via a mobile device or standing in line looking at a monitor in a grocery store or at a coffee shop, or and an aggregator, whether that's Google News or Yahoo News. And so, you know, our feeling is you have to deliver this information to people where they want it and when they want it. And if that's at Google, then that's fine with us.
Well, again, thanks for being with us today and good luck to you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
John Broad, the co-founder and CEO of Patch, a hyper-local news site now publishing in South Orange, Maplewood, and Millburn in New Jersey. Coming up, the next time you ask Chad Michael Murray to your prom, remember, he's probably not going to be reading your letter. Sherry DeAngelis will, though. We'll talk to her about celebrity fan mail reading. Stay with us. It's the Talk of the Nation coming up after the news.